Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. We've got a lot to get to today, from the latest brinkmanship in Iran to threats to Social Security, and a great moment with a military hero. But let's kick things off with the latest in Trump versus California, where the courts ruled in favor of the president's deployment of National Guard troops to Los Angeles, affirming his presidential authority to do so. But there's a little more to it than just that, so let's get the news first from KCBS in the Bay Area.
Let's return now to the KCBS political analyst, Mark Sandalow. So, Mark, presidential authority affirmed for now?
For now, although with limit, what Trump had argued is that the statute allows him, first of all, to protect federal officers doing their duty, which is what he says ICE was doing, and he can federalize the National Guard to do that. He also made the argument that as commander-in-chief, he can do whatever he wants. The National Guard is under his purview if he decides so, and that no court can tell him not to. The court rejected that last argument, saying, absolutely, your actions are reviewable by the court. But in this instance, it is very likely that the statute does protect you in that there were indeed rocks being thrown at ICE officers and such, and in that sense, they rejected a lower court and basically said that for now, Trump has control of federal troops. So they are in LA. And if for some reason, say in San Francisco, ICE officers requested the National Guard accompany them, there it seems like nothing that would stop that. But there is a limitation here. Let's say, for example, that Trump decided, you know, California is doing this nutty thing where they're letting trans women compete in athletic exercises. Send the National Guard out there to make sure that these trans women don't participate. This court ruling specifically says that that sort of thing is reviewable by the courts. That is not in the statute. You can't send the National Guard out to do whatever you want, but protecting ICE officers, that's permitted.
Do you expect an appeal?
Yeah, no question. And this is where it gets really complicated because already there's going to be a hearing today in Charles Breyer's court. He's the brother of the former Supreme Court Justice from San Francisco, Stephen Breyer. He's the one who initially said that Trump couldn't control the guard. There's another hearing in his court today. This can also be appealed. Look, most of this is moot. Despite what the president has said, that LA is essentially going to burn down if the National Guard is there, no one in reality believes that. In fact, he put out on Truth Social just in the last 12 hours, he said, judges obviously realize that Gavin Newsom is incompetent and ill-prepared. Well, no, the judges said absolutely nothing like that, you know, whatsoever. At the same time, and this has been familiar with a lot of what Trump has done. The courts have not stopped him, but they have told him that there are limits to what you can do, which is contrary to what the White House has been asserting.
One question. What are the implications for governor's authority over their state's National Guard in future situations of, say, domestic unrest or emergencies, given what went down?
It's a good question. I think that what this ruling says is that if the administration can show that federal officers are threatened, whether it's ICE officers or whatever, then the president has the authority. That doesn't mean that the president doesn't like what's going on in a situation and say the local police can't handle it, but the governor says, please don't come in here, it's only going to inflame it. This does not give Trump the permission to send in troops.
So the National Guard is a domestic situation, but in issues abroad, nothing is more important right now than Iran. Jim Carafano joined the Mark Cox Show to discuss President Trump's strategy of putting pressure on Iran to prevent them from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
Everybody in the world understands what the president is facing here, preventing Iran from getting a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody's obsessing about the decision of, you know, will the U.S. bomb or not, and they're actually not stopping and listening to the president. President is doing what he's always doing. He's, I'm putting America's interest first. The interest is Iran having a nuclear weapon is not in the interest of the United States. That's what he cares about. So he's looking at two things. One is, look, Iranians want to come to the table and make the deal because you can't unkill people, right? Once you blow stuff up, you can't undo that. So if the Iranians want this all to stop, and make a deal to do nuclearize, great. The other variable is what are the Israelis doing? I mean, the Israelis are being incredibly successful, and they would probably continue to do that. And the U.S. will monitor that. So if the Israelis essentially have denuclearized Iran, you know, physically, then there's no need for U.S. intervention.
Right.
I don't know why the people are worried about extending this. Actually, I think the brilliance of what I love about the Trump strategy is by just saying we might intervene, that puts so much enormous additional pressure on the Iranians you cannot actually imagine. So Trump just saying that is worth 3 aircraft carriers sailing through the Red Sea.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of people are really, there's a lot of hand-wringing about this on the right. And I'm listening to, I think, Charlie Kirk recently, Tucker Carlson, MTG. They're all worried about this so much. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, it at some point, a leader has to make these decisions. And if it ends up that we have to drop a bomb, that's not the same as sending troops in, although we all know there's no substitute for feet on the ground.
So I have two things, and I actually think they're both positive. One is, the thing I love about the modern conservative movement, and I love about President Trump's leadership, is this is not the left. The left is, there's an orthodoxy. Everybody must believe exactly the same thing. Otherwise, you know, you should be arrested like a J6 guy and sent to prison. The right is, look, a big, unruly pirate ship who don't agree on everything. But that is our strength. So the fact that there are serious leaders in the party who disagree on foreign policy, that doesn't actually bother me at all. That's how you make foreign policy. You can't say policy is about American interests and then not have a vigorous conversation of, okay, I don't have a problem with that.
Jim, I think the
Ayatollah... In the end, they're all going to accept president leadership.
I think the Ayatollah Khomeini is blocking part of your phone signal this morning because you keep cutting in and out on me.
How's this?
Yeah, you're still breaking up a little bit. Let me play a piece of sound for you from Rahm Emanuel yesterday and get your reaction to this interesting historical perspective from a liberal Democrat. Listen.
Now, I'm haunted by two things. Not haunted, but I have a flashing yellow light. In 1994, same room, Situation Room, mm-hmm. Bill Clinton was getting very, basically his security team, bombed North Korea. President Carter, having gone there, messed it up and messed up that opportunity. And now you have a nuclear North Korea.
Yeah. How about that? Rahm Emanuel admitting that Clinton missed an opportunity to do the same thing with North Korea, and everybody regrets it all these years later.
Well, I actually, I think Trump's in the driver's seat right now because what's already been achieved has so significantly weakened and pushed this regime back that I don't think we're in the same situation as Clinton. I mean, the Israelis have already kind of reset the entire region. And so the president's it's about how do we leverage that for maximum advantage to the United States. This is not the crisis moment like Pearl Harbor or something. I think you're just wrong on this one.
Interesting. Yeah, I just thought it was interesting for Emanuel, of all people, who I think is a potential presidential candidate for the left, to be basically out there defending the possibility of Donald Trump making a strike here.
Well, it's not the strategy, it's the politics of that make that interesting.
Yeah.
Of all the people who are looking for national leadership, Rahm Emanuel has been the most kind of out there saying, you know what, the orthodoxy that we have had as a party in the direction we're driving is actually creating the 80-20 America. And that if we ever want a Democratic to get elected again, we need a leader whose policies actually have to at least get us back to 50-50.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective on it. What I mean, if you were a betting man, would you think in the next 2 weeks this will be decided one way or the other?
Well, I think the 2 weeks is certainly enough time to see if the Iranians will actually come to the table. Look, I never thought the Iranians would come to the table because in this part of the world, if you admit weakness, That is an incredibly dishonorable. I mean, you're really undermining their credibility to the regime. And the Iranians, just the thought that they would publicly make an open deal and then humiliate themselves like that, to me, is tantamount to just saying, you know, we're done here. But yeah. It's much more likely that they might quietly make a bunch of agreements and just things would go, you know, kind of. So I think it's more likely to either kind of whimper out or the regime collapse.
All right, well, we shall see, my friend.
In other domestic matters, the Social Security Trust Fund is projected to be depleted by 2034. Here's Tara Servatius on what's going wrong and what it'll take to fix it.
Well, Lee, now this is going to come as a shock, I know, because nobody saw this coming. Social Security's Trust Fund is on track.
No.
Yes, to
You're
go broke.
You're kidding me, Tara.
By 2034.
Yeah.
Yeah, but don't worry. We'll just print some money. We'll just print the money. And you got an old Monopoly game in the house? Got some of that Monopoly money? Yes. My son loves to play Monopoly. Yeah. 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 Just go ahead and use that. It'll work. That's a plan. You know what a lot of people don't realize about Social Security, and everybody's very protective of it because you've paid into it. You've seen all that money come out of your paycheck. I get it, yeah. Right? You want yours. You paid in. Well, the thing with Social Security, when it was originally passed, it was supposed to have essentially what is a lockbox. In other words, we'll take the money. We'll put it over here.
Right.
And yes. And then, you know, we'll pay out of it. And that system might have actually worked, barring some population fluctuations.
Yeah, that's the other issue.
Well, that's on top of it. But Congress has been raiding the Social Security funds for years and replacing with IOUs that it then counts in its accounting as real money, but it's not.
Yeah, us old folks that are looking forward to this, you need to be procreating, folks, the younger generation. You're not doing enough.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, okay? And I just read this as an analysis by David Bonshin. Listen to this. The first person, to his credit, and I'm not a big fan of George W. Bush, but he did get a few things right. He wanted to privatize Social Security accounts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? So we put it in the account. And the biggest argument for that is once it goes in your account with your name on it, Congress can't touch it. Mm-hmm. They can't steal it from you because that's who stole it. Well, had we done that when George W. Bush wanted to do it, the asset, just given stock market and everything that has happened, the asset allocation, even if conservatively invested, that money would be worth five times what it was when it went in there starting 20 years ago.
And I remember the outcry, the political outcry that the left had, and some Republicans too, about this whole concept of privatizing Social Security.
Yep. Well, we now know how that would have worked. It would have been worth five times what you put in. And get this, this is even worse. This is how bad of a deal Social Security is and how bad they rip you, really, when you pay in. This is so incredible. You realize the average Social Security recipient gets fewer actual dollars back than they put in. And that doesn't even count the dollars loss of value through inflation. Actual one-to-one dollars fewer back than you put in. It is the worst deal ever. So, but to get back on what he was writing, had we done what Bush wanted to do, but it was defeated, that money would be worth five times because of the stock market performance, even with some stock market drops in there, you know, some bad years, would have been worth five times what it was worth when you put it in. Instead, we went with the genius system because we always do the dumbest thing in America. Yes. Always do it. We always do the dumbest thing. Instead, we are $6 trillion in the hole. So we could have had, you know, the money be worth five times what it was, but we're $6 trillion in the hole. Democrats, y'all. So, and some Republicans, you said, but mostly Democrats.
So we're going to keep doing what we've been doing.
Yeah. And to his credit, my other least favorite Republican, Paul Ratfink Ryan, he wanted to do this too. And had we done it when Ratfink wanted to do it, we'd be in really good shape right now.
Well,
we would not be broke like
even
this.
Even a stop clock is right twice a day, okay? So, you know, you got to give them credit when they get it right.
I really I really wish people at a minimum could be given an option. You can either pay your Social Security into an account. And when you do that, you opt out of receiving the government Social Security. So you're taking a little bit of a chance. You know what I'm saying? That there might be some catastrophe and you end up broke. But the upside is
the government's broke.
Yeah, the government's broke. They may not be able to pay you anyway. And you're probably going, you know, if it performed the way it did out of the last 20 years, you're going to come out with five times the value. you know, from date, you know, from the start of the money that you put in. So, I mean, it's just, we had two chances not to end up here. We didn't, we should have, and you can now see that in retrospect. But the left framed that as stealing the money and taking the money when in fact they were the ones stealing the money. And putting IOUs in the lockbox. A lot of people don't know that.
I'm
going
to tell you, if I were going to get five times what it looks like I would be able to get monthly now on Social Security, I'd already be retired.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, these are, no, but in all seriousness, like that you love the grandbaby, right? Those are that's what you could be doing. You and your wife could be driving down there. You could be hanging out.
I could buy another house up there.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, there's so many things you could be doing. I mean, these are real moments of your life that the government has cost you. It's a real cost. It's a quality of life cost. It's all of that. Yeah. So, you know, shame we didn't do it. Shame on us for not doing that. Now we've got a real problem. We can't, we're not going to be able to print our way out of this stuff forever. This is going to be a problem. And look, while there are a lot of great things in the big, beautiful bill, I mean, game-changing things, again, the tax cuts are funded with printing. They're printing money and borrowing money. And that's on top of us, you know, heading toward the Social Security. Oh, and Medicare calamity, too.
Yeah, of course.
So again, Lee, this is why the tax evasion scam, the illegal tax evasion scam of illegal immigrant labor is so bad because you don't pay taxes on people working under the table. Where does the money come out of? It comes out of those Medicare funds, comes out of Social Security. It's money that would have been paid in, but it's not. And where does it go? It goes in executives' pockets. It fattens up the earning reports. It's illegal. And that too is part of the reason we have got to end the scourge of illegal immigrant employment. I mean, worst case scenario, if we truly don't have the bodies to do these jobs, I don't believe that. But if we don't, well, then you know what? You bring them out on visas and you schedule the visas so they're paying it. Make it profitable. Have them pay into Medicare, even if we're sending them home in 6 years. You pay in, you help us keep it solvent. Mm-hmm. Let's do smart things as a country instead of putting illegal immigrants on the welfare state. I mean, 1.4, I mean, this is Medicaid, not Medicare, but 1.4 million illegals illegally on Medicaid. Why? So we could print the money? And again, do you see how the scam works? Mm-hmm. Who profits? Wall Street, the lawbreakers, the people hiring them. And so it's so much more than, well, it was a misdemeanor when he came here, and then there was another felony on top of that when he started working. No, it's the tax evasion scheme that's the worst part, and nobody talks about it. That's the whole point. And folks, this is why this week NBC News shocked to find, remember the owner in Nebraska of that meat processing plant, Trump took 76 of his illegals in a raid. He's screaming and yelling to NBC News, what will I do? How will I go forward? And then it turned out his waiting room was packed full of Americans applying for the jobs. Why? Because locally, everybody knows if you're not an illegal, you can't work there. They're going to hire you. They'd have to pay taxes on you. You'd have to be above board about it. Plus, they'll have to pay you a real wage. No, it's not going to work. Well, now the illegals are gone. What? Americans are in the waiting room. They will do dirty jobs. So we got to straighten all this out. And Trump letting, you know, saying he was going to let these employers continue to break the law because they like Jorge and he's been there 25 years. No, sorry, you don't get to break the law, period. And I think Trump came to his senses and reversed himself, but it appears he has anyway. So they've at least resumed the immigration raids. They had put out a memo saying to stop them. And that was not good because these illegals were self-deporting. So you don't want to give them any hope that they're going to be able to stay here. You want them to self-deport and just get out of there. So, there's a lot of great stuff in the Build Back Better bill too. I'm sorry. The big, beautiful bill. Wow. Where did that come from? Build Back Better. That was a disaster. The big, beautiful bill. One of my favorite things that's gotten almost no attention, because I really think this is going to be a game changer, and Kevin Hassett was talking about it yesterday, is 100% expensing of factories up front. So you don't have to do it over 15 years or 10 years or 7 years, 100% expensing of your factory upfront. That is going to be a game changer in terms of, wow, okay, wait, I can 100% expense my factory. You know what that means for people who come here, especially foreigners coming here and building factories, but also those expanding? You're not going to pay taxes for years because the equivalent of by the time you burn off that factory, that's wow. That's fantastic. It's going to be the first thing the Democrats target too if they ever get back in office. But yeah, 100% factory expense. I mean, that's like, I can't even wait to see how that works out. Because I think you're going to see a boom in people building factories. And it's going to create demand for more workers, which is going to just, you know, push those blue collar wages up and skilled labor wages too. So anyway, just want to let you know, we don't need to be broke. We don't need to be here. It's all self-inflicted through really, really bad policy. So it's going to be 2 weeks to stop the spread of nukes. Why 2 weeks? With Trump? Yeah, I just don't know. No, you really don't know. It could be what he did last time going into the Israeli attack on Iran, which was play a bunch of games that made Iran think, because of all his flip-flopping, that, well, maybe we do have some time. Maybe we can sit down and enrich our way right to a bomb while we talk. And then, bam, the bomb started. So Trump was actually actively part of a disinformation operation that was very much military in style. So maybe that's what he's doing now. Or maybe he actually means 2 weeks. You never know with Trump. Which used to be called flip-flopping, but now is actually pretty good strategery. But what about this 2 weeks? Ben Tableau of the Defense of Democracies was on with Pyro this morning, explaining what they can do with it.
And it gives the Israelis significant time to continue to erode the long-range strike capabilities and really defang the Iranian missile, military, and nuclear apparatus. So should the president decide to enter, the U.S. actually has less work here. So this is consistent both with the president's philosophy and with the idea of America first.
Okay. Another thing that ultimately what Trump would like to do, it's good cover for him. It's good cover for the Israelis. Just good politics is for the Israelis Iranians to say, okay, we give up, total surrender. You can come in and destroy our nuke plants. But hey, let us live. And then, you know, hopefully you can fly in safely and do that. And that gives you moral cover too. That would be the ideal, but that's not happening. Iran is signaling, I think in part because the Euro weenies have given them an opening. Well, we'll talk to you some more. Yeah, okay, like for 45 years while they enrich uranium and lie about it, violate every single deal they've ever cut. Iran now saying, oh, yeah, no, we're cool with nuclear talks. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, and we'll involve the Euro weenies and all of that. But they're rejecting zero enrichment. So non-starter. Because they've cheated on all the other deals that they have done. Todd Pyro, though, asking a good question about the 2 weeks to stop the nuclear spread delay.
What do you make of the theory that this 2 week window from Trump is merely a delay tactic to allow Israel to perform a covert op inside Fordo to do exactly the same thing that the bunker buster would do, which is destroy Fordo?
Well, a covert op designed to ferry out the uranium would be 100% safer, would be 100% more secure way, because you would know if the uranium was not destroyed in some kind of blast or explosion. But conversely, it comes with a lot more risks. I don't see this, by the way, as some kind of covert op or psyop or anything designed to buy time for that. I actually see it as designed to buy time for the Iranians to realize how much of a bind they are, how much they have critically lost, and how much President Trump is giving them one last chance before really hitting pedal to the metal here. To be honest, just looking objectively as an outsider, the only thing that is standing between the collapse of this regime and certain death is President Trump. So President Trump has a real capability to say it's dismantle or else.
Yeah. And General Jack Keane was on yesterday, you know, just explaining, the Israelis technically could try to go after Fordo this way, but
there are alternatives. They're just not as good. I mean, Israel can certainly conduct a ground raid, you know, secure the facility and then blow it up and try to get out of there without taking a lot of casualties. There's a lot of risk associated with that. They successfully, back in 2020, took down the power grid that supports Natanz, and a lot of the centrifuges as a result of that were destroyed because the centrifuges got to keep spinning. You could also take down the ventilation system and deny that, obviously, ventilation to people working there. So there are alternatives, but none of them are quite as good as an airstrike with a bomb that has the capability to deal with the deepness of this target 300 feet into the ground is quite formidable in trying to penetrate and achieve destruction. So it is the preferred option. But obviously, as you asked, there are other options. It's just more risk associated with them.
Everybody talking about the problems Trump has, that's what most of the media coverage is on both sides of this, really. All the problems Trump has, all the risks Trump has. But what about the Iranians? General Jack Keane weighed in on that.
Well, their air force is completely destroyed. And their air power infrastructure to support it, you know, with fuel, munitions, and the things that define air power besides airplanes, they have a very small navy, some frigates, some patrol boats. They're capable of mining the Straits of Hormuz. If we didn't take out that capability, or the Israelis take it out, they're pretty much reduced to missiles in terms of some form of retaliation. But believe me, if they're going to walk down that path, given the weakened position that they are in right now, Stuart, they know full well that the United States' response to something like that will be quite massive. And I think they recognize that their regime's survivability would truly be at risk if they take on the United States as a result of our conducting this limited strike, which is kind of a one-off strike. This is Israeli operation. They have led it for the last 6-7 days, and we would be supporting them with a significant capability, to be sure. I don't want to minimize it, but it is one airstrike at that target. We're not part of the major campaign that Israel is conducting here. And if Iran reacts to that, significantly trying to take down U.S. troops at our bases, our response will be quite consequential, and yeah. I would assume that they're very much aware of that. And they are in such a weakened position now, Stuart. I mean, the military leadership, as you know, is decapitated. So is the nuclear leadership. Airplanes have been flying over all the major cities and over Iran, the capital, Tehran, you know, 5 days, 6 days, days and nights. I mean, the psychological and emotional impact of that is significant. The civilian leadership in its entirety is in hiding. Yeah. They're in bunkers. So I don't expect them to do much in terms of major retaliation, because I think they know the risk to them personally and the risk to their being able to survive would really be at stake as a regime.
Yeah, they know one thing. Soleimani. He was the number two and Trump killed him. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt, they know this, Trump will kill you. The only question is what he'll kill you for. By the way, fascinating resurfaced interview that really can tell you a lot about what Trump is thinking here. You know that Trump had, the mullahs had the Iranians on such a short leash that when they did retaliation strikes on us for killing Soleimani, you know, they called him first. They called him to let him know, hey, like, yeah, we heard you. You're going to turn our country into a parking lot if we retaliate. We got it. We understand. We're cool with it. Hey, we got to save face and respond. So we're going to fire some missiles near your base, but they won't hit your base. We just want to let you know so there's no service members outside the base when we do it. And then that's exactly what they did. And he revealed it later. And they didn't kill a single service member for the rest of Trump's term. Biden comes in, we got Navy SEALs dead in the Red Sea. We've got drones flown in right into our bases, service members being assassinated. I mean, folks, imagine these people on, off the chain again, another Democrat administration, and now they've got nuclear fissile material. Not just nuclear weapons, but the nuclear material they can proliferate. There's just no other way forward. Yeah, he took the midnight train, so did she. It all worked out. What a great song. It's just the pure sound of America. All right. It's not the weekend yet. Still got to work. You too. So get moving. Okay. Victor Davis Hanson, y'all, really nails this.
We are at a historic time in the Middle East. Never in our lifetimes have we been closer to a complete revolutionary fervor that gives promise of normalcy for the Middle East, and never have we been in more danger of seeing the entire region blow up. What am I referring to? And that is the war right now between Iran and Israel. It is surreal. If we had this conversation 5 years ago, and I said to you, the Iranian nation that is huge compared to Israel, 10 times the population, the Iranian nation has lost all control of the Houthi terrorists, and they are themselves neutered. Their surrogates in the West Bank, Gaza, are neutered. They're gone as a Hamas, as a fighting force. The formidable, the terrifying Hezbollah cadres, they're inert. There is no more Syria. The Assad dynasty, the pro-Iranian Assyria, it's in chaos, but whatever the chaos is, seems to be anti-Iranian. There is no Shia crescent, starting with Tehran all the way to the Mediterranean. Lebanon is free of Iranian influence. So is Syria. Gaza de facto will be. There is no Russian presence. It's not a patron. It's not a protector. It's not a power in the Middle East. It's tied down in Ukraine. And Iran itself, the formidable powerhouse of the Middle East that evoked terror all over, has no defenses. And now we've seen 5 days of war in which the Israelis have systematically dismantled all of the Iranian missile defenses. They have air defenses. They have dismantled the terrorist hierarchy. They have dismantled the people who are responsible for the nuclear program. And we're down to a single critical issue. They have suffered casualties. The Iranians have sent over 400 ballistic missiles and drones into Israel. And 90% are stopped, but that 10% gets through.
Yeah, that's why we just had texture, right? The two-week delay is devastating. It is devastating for the Israelis, because that 10% getting through, they're going to keep getting hit. There's going to be more hospitals hit, more kids killed. It's, yeah. On the other hand, it does buy time. Want to hit this again in this hour. I did it in 2 hours yesterday, but I think this is remarkable. Most of the opposition to this taking out, and folks, we have fought so many fake enemies. I'm sick to death of fighting fake enemies, enemies where our own leaders have to lie to us to get us into the conflict. This is a real enemy. And it's an enemy that is partnered, you know, hand and foot, body and soul with the Democrat Party. And folks, you've seen what they've done. Think October 7th. Think Houthis, 319 strikes on our military ships. Think Brigadier General warning, they're going to sink one of our ships. They are going to kill our soldiers. In fact, they already killed two SEALs. Nobody talks about that. Think about another Democrat administration. Think about another $300 billion thrown Iran's way. Think about the resurrection of each one of, you know, their, you know, Hamas, Hezbollah, their other operatives. Except now they're moving against us. They have nuclear fissile material, and China is directing them. That was the big reveal in the Red Sea. This was not Iran's proxy, the Houthis, hitting the ships that come through that shipping lane. 20% of the world's trade goes through there. It's critical for us, critical for Europe. This isn't just the Houthis. China was doing the targeting of our naval ships. You better believe that got Trump's attention. Again, can you imagine throwing nuclear fissile material, nuclear-tipped munitions into that? Because that's coming. And the Democrats will turn their head as our military folks are murdered. They'll turn their head as they try to kill. They will, because they did last time, Trump again. So to me, it was astonishing that the guy leading the Republican opposition to finally taking out an actual enemy of America, not the fake ones we keep fighting. Iran has done so much more to us, killed so many. But do you realize they killed 608 of our troops in Iraq? You realize that, right? Never avenged. Till Trump came along and took out Soleimani. That's the only justice they'll ever get. And who is leading this? Who is leading the opposition to finally defanging this enemy? I don't want to do nation building. I don't want a single troop on their soil. I'd oppose that. Tucker Carlson. Does he have a clue what he's talking about? No.
And we're on the cusp of a war. So if Iran, if there's evidence that Iran paid hitmen to kill Donald Trump and is currently doing that, where's that? Like, what are you even talking? I've never heard that before.
Okay.
Where's the evidence? Who are these people? Why haven't they been arrested? Why are we not at war with Iran?
That's a great question to ask.
How do you know that that's true?
We know that it's true because we have been told that by the military and our intelligence community for the last 2 years.
We meaning who?
Congress has and the public. I mean, we had multiple testimonies. I can send you testimony.
Do we know the names of the people or where this happened or what they tried to do to kill Trump?
Yes. Currently in federal custody across two assassination plot attempts, Asif Merchant, Carlisle Rivera, Jonathan Lodhold. There is a fourth Iranian assassin who escaped. They think he made it back to Iran. Carlson didn't know, he claims. But this story has a happy ending. Once he was informed by the internet and Ted Cruz, well, we got an apology to Donald Trump. And Tucker Carlson says, wow, we should go to war.
In the United States.
Yes. And by the way, like Iran...
This just seems like a huge headline, and you're acting like everyone knows this. I didn't know that.
Iran put out a whole video about murdering Trump.
Right, but I've never heard evidence that there are hitmen in the United States. I mean, trying to kill Trump right now. We should, like, have a nationwide dragnet on this, and we should attack Iran immediately if that's true. Don't you think?
No.
If they're trying to assassinate our president?
They have been for 2 years.
Then
they
are
enemies.
Why are we at war with them?
Well,
because Joe Biden was too busy funding them from pallets of cash all the way on up to $300 billion plus $40 billion in cash funds they could draw down on. That's why. Like Iran wanted Trump dead. Their handlers in China wanted Trump dead. Democrats, they just want him gone. So it all works out. And it will go right back to being that way. You cannot walk away from this country. You cannot opt out. They are opting in. They're not quitting. They're not giving up. We shouldn't either. We have a great chance to take these people out. Look, folks, again, I don't want a single boot on that soil. Maybe some special forces if we have to. Very light footprint, perhaps, for some operation, but and maybe just for targeting or something. But even then, I'm not wild about it. I don't want any nation building. I'd freak out if you did that. Hit the nukes. Kill Khomeini. Let the let the Israelis do it. Kill Khomeini, and we're done here. We move on. All of this, Victor Davis Hanson says, will be for naught if we don't destroy the nukes. And we've got this one last chance to do it because you can't have them. Can you imagine if Iran got a nuke, if we, you know, delayed too long or decided, hey, we're not going forward with this and Iran gets a nuke? Can you, and the nuclear fissile material, which I'm almost more afraid of that proliferating. I mean, with a nuclear weapon, you get mutual assured destruction. Folks, there is a reason the Iranian intercontinental ballistic missiles go as far as they do. Israel is on the same continent. That's not who they're for. They're for us. They're for us. Can you imagine? I mean, right now, our naval ships are out there. We just decimated the Houthis, at least the Red Sea portion of it. Israel's still dealing with the rest of them. And after 319 strikes. Can you imagine? I mean, just and again, the Red Sea is a 20% of the world's trade goes through their route. Can you imagine how complicated that becomes? Because they're a proxy of Iran. They're using all Iranian equipment and hardware. If Iran's got a nuke, I don't even know how we're going to police our container ships as they go to Europe. With a nuclear armed Iran and China doing the targeting of our ships for Iran in partnership, which is the scariest thing. I mean, when you look at this, the Houthis are a proxy for Iran, but Iran is a proxy for China. I mean, to me, one of the big game changers was in April, again, with learning. I made a huge deal of it on the show. Didn't get a lot of news. China is doing the satellite targeting and assisting in the targeting of our naval ships, our cargo ships. By the way, you know, the Houthis sunk three ships, not ours. They killed four seafarers. You throw a nuke into that equation. You throw even nuclear fissile material into that equation. You tip missiles with it. I don't even know how we protect our cargo ships. But I know this, whoever's in the Navy on those ships, God help them. You put that with another Democrat administration, they're going to come right in and take the Houthis back off the terror watch list again. And the funding will flow to them. USAID or whatever reconstituted version of it is, will make sure. Because wherever China and Iran are, you have the Democrat Party. That is one of their proxies, allies. I mean, Iran is an ally of the Democrat Party. I'm just getting started. This is a game changer. We could go the other way, too, as you heard from Victor Davis Hanson. But it all comes down to this is all for naught if we don't get all of the nuclear material.
All of this chaos and all of this war will be for naught if Iran's theocracy emerges intact from this war and its nuclear infrastructure can either be quickly rebuilt or there are elements of it that have been missed and maybe there is enough fissionable material, if not already, soon to make another bomb. So here we are at the critical point. Should Israel continue, does it have the ability to nullify the entire nuclear program, which was the object of this war? Or must it rely on the bunker buster devices, bombs of the United States? And if the United States should try to go into these key nuclear facilities and blow them up with the ordnance and the aircraft that it has, which Israel lacks, will it be fighting an optional Middle East war of which the MAGA doctrine says no more forever wars, no more intervention in the Middle East, no more ground troops? Or can Trump say, I'm not an isolationist, I'm a Jacksonian. You should have known that when I took out Soleimani in my first term, when I took out Baghdadi, when I took out the Wagner Group. I don't like to intervene, but when people threaten the United States and our deterrence is a matter of conjecture, I want to ensure that they understand the repercussions. And so is there a fight between the isolationists and the Jacksonians, or is it just a minor group of people on the right who don't want any action at all? And we don't know the answer yet.
Let's wrap things up today with something important. Law and order. Sergeant Michael McFarland and Trooper Brett Pittman from the Florida Highway Patrol Lake City District were involved in a high-speed pursuit of an armed murder suspect across multiple counties. They faced extreme danger, including the suspect firing shots at them, but helped locate and stop the dangerous individual. And for that, we salute you. Hear their story next on WSKY Radio in Florida.
Today's honorees, from the Florida Highway Patrol Lake City District, saluting Sergeant Michael McFarland and Trooper Brett Pittman. McFarland began his career in Gainesville after graduating from the FHP Academy in 2012 and has advanced to the rank of sergeant in Columbia County. Pittman graduated in 2018, assigned to Alachua County. In 2020, he transferred to Lake City and is a member of the FHP Quick Response Team. Why are McFarland and Pittman being honored? Last February 7th, they were involved in the pursuit of an armed murder suspect from Gadsden County. They located the dangerous man's vehicle on I-10 in Sewanee County, rolling into Madison County. During the chase, the suspect fired shots at the pursuing troopers, even fleeing through oncoming traffic, traveling the wrong way eastbound on the westbound lanes of I-10. The pursuit ended when he crashed into a ditch on Highway 90 just west of Live Oak. The suspect took off on foot, shot and injured a Suwannee County deputy. He finally was located by Live Oak police, who engaged the armed suspect and eliminated the threat. McFarland and Pittman faced extreme peril, helping locate this armed murder suspect facing gunfire while preventing him from endangering other citizens during a multi-county interstate pursuit. For their extraordinary heroism and selflessness, Florida Highway Patrol's Lake City District and 97.3 The Sky are proud to salute Sergeant Michael McFarland and Trooper Brett Pittman as today's Sky Valor honorees.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.